This is Betty Turnell with the Oral History Series sponsored by the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. Donald E. Minton, retiring chief of the Decatur Fire Department. Well, Mr. Minton, welcome to our series. How long have you been a member of the fire department?
I've been a member of the fire department 33 years.
Oh, great. That's a long time.
I have loved the job and enjoyed it the full 33 years that I've been on the department.
But it's time to change.
That's correct. I think it's time to let some of the younger fellows have a chance.
Well, we want to know something of your experiences. But tell me, how long have you lived in Decatur?
I was born and raised in Decatur.
Oh, you were?
So
yeah.
I'm a Decatur native.
Well, great. We won't say when, but
well,
we can guess because you're retiring.
That's correct. I'm retiring young.
Good.
I hope that gives me a chance to do a few things that my wife and I want to do.
I'm sure you've had a strenuous career, as we'll find out. But I think you will be looking forward, probably, to retiring, but you're going to still live in Decatur.
Yes, that's correct. My children and grandchildren most of them are here. Mm-hmm. And my friends, this is where I want to stay. I like Decatur.
Well, I do, too. I'm glad you do. Okay, well, in your childhood at Decatur, can you tell us something about it? What were some of your experiences in growing up here?
Well, a little bit about my childhood. I suppose I thought I had a normal childhood. I would assume most children think that they have a normal childhood. Like I stated previously, I was born in Decatur. I started my schooling at Oakland School, which is now torn down. It's no longer there. That's where I had my grade school education. I lived in the 1100 block West Forest, which was a nice neighborhood. During my junior high school years, I went to Woodrow Wilson Junior High School, which at the time I thought was the best junior high school in the city. While I was in junior high school, I suppose that's when I started to develop some of my work habits. My family, now I would consider to have been a poor family at the time. My first jobs were mowing grass and taking care of lawns in the neighborhood. I also had paper routes. I had a morning and an evening paper route.
Well, that kept you busy.
It did. I thought it did, but I still had plenty of time to play the usual childish games
and you made
have
money.
Fun. Oh, I had to make money, and I enjoyed it. I went to Decatur High School when Decatur only had one high school, one public high school. And again, while I was in high school, I also worked at the Varsity Theater.
What did you do there?
I started out as an usher and worked my way up to, at that time, doorman. As I look back, the pay, I think I started working at the Varsity Theater for like 10 or 15 cents an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
And by the time I had quit there, maybe worked myself up to a quarter an hour job.
Oh.
But that's at the time when the quarter was worth a quarter and went further than what
you
it does now.
Didn't feel deprived.
No, not really. I felt that if there was anything that I needed then, I could buy. Yeah. Now, as far as wants, everybody wants things that they can't afford to buy, but I think I got everything that the salary purchased me, everything that I needed. I graduated from Decatur High School in 1949. Yeah. That gives you a little knowledge of my age. I graduated at the normal age for a high school person. My first job in the city after graduating was with Walrus Manufacturing Company. During my high school years, I took some vocational cabinet making courses. Mm-hmm. I loved working with wood. Mm-hmm. I can remember in my junior high school years, too, I liked woodworking. And I still do to this day like woodworking. This is my relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
when I came home from the frustrating day at the fire station to go out in the garage and work on a wood project, I enjoyed doing. I did not stay at Walrus very long.
Did they manufacture wood products?
Yes, they manufactured cabinets and laboratory tables.
Mm-hmm.
That they were a cabinet making firm.
Yes.
But the pay was not as good there as what I could get at the Staley Company, so I went to work at Staley Company in 1949.
That after high school.
Right. I started on the extra board at Staley's, which is where everybody started when they started working at Staley's. And
does that mean you fill in jobs?
Yeah, fill in jobs. You didn't have a steady shift. Mm-hmm. You worked when they needed you and where they needed
you. You learned all a number of different jobs.
Yes. My father worked at Staley's. However, I did not ever have the opportunity while I worked at Staley's to work with my father. I stayed at Staley's until I was drafted into the Army in January of 1952. Mm-hmm. I spent 2 years in the service. Most of my time after basic training was spent in Japan. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a very enjoyable experience.
Very educational.
I got to see a lot of the world that I would not have gotten to have seen had I not been in the service. It's the type of experiences that you wouldn't have traded for anything, but you wouldn't want to have done them again. I got out of the service in January 54 and went back to work at Staley's. Staley's was a good place to work.
That's good.
I enjoyed working at Staley's, but I didn't think that I wanted to make factory work my life's occupancy. An opportunity came to get on the fire department in 1955 when the work week of the firefighter was lowered from a 72-hour work week to 56 hours. And they put on almost a complete shift of men, and that is when I went on the fire department then in October 10th, 1955.
Good. Well, Mr. Minton, did you have any special reason for joining the fire department?
Well, no, not really. It was an opportunity to try another job, and I thought that the fire department offered security, a better pension for my retirement years, and I suppose, as all kids, you know, you have a fascination toward the fire and the police departments.
Yes.
And the I wanted to try the fire department.
And you didn't mind the danger or the physical problems involved?
At that time, I gave no consider to the to the danger or the physical problems. I didn't realize that they were as severe as what they are.
But you probably found out. All right, well, let's see what positions you held in the department.
One thing that I did learn later on, that the firefighter's job is the most hazardous occupation in the world.
I can believe that.
It still is. More firefighters are hurt, injured, and die in the line of duty than any other occupation. Mm-hmm. Now, mining, I believe, is second. My positions on the fire department. I started out as a firefighter in 1955, and in November of 1961, I was promoted to lieutenant.
What did you do as lieutenant?
A lieutenant acted as a, didn't act, but served as a company officer in the absence of the captain. The captain was in charge of the fire station, and in his absence, the lieutenant served then as the person in charge or as a unit commander. We had more pieces of equipment than we had fire stations, so lieutenants were in charge of pieces of equipment as they left the stations to respond to alarms. In 1962, October of 1962, I then received a promotion to the captain rank and served as a station commander. Basically, there were four people at a fire station, at the smaller outside fire stations. Mm-hmm. Now, on the fire department, Station 1 has always been the headquarters fire station.
Mm-hmm. And these are the buildings where the equipment is housed and the men stay between duties.
That's correct. At fire station number 1, there was more than one piece of equipment running out of that station. But at the outlying stations, there was only basically one piece of equipment running out of that station. And so the captain then was in charge of the personnel at that station and that piece of equipment. There are responsibilities for a captain, company officer, because frequently he is first in at the scene of the alarm, and so decisions have to be made by that company officer before a senior officer can arrive or get there. So there were responsibilities as a company officer or as a unit commander, and there still are. The next level above captain on the fire department is the battalion chief or shift commander rank. I did not serve in that capacity. As a captain, I was offered the opportunity to take the test and go through the procedures for the assistant chief's position, and on December of 1972, I was promoted to assistant chief of the fire department.
So that was a real promotion.
Yes. The responsibilities were totally different. As assistant chief of the fire department, my responsibilities were to coordinate the efforts of the three battalions, or shifts. A battalion is a shift of people. And to coordinate their efforts.
How many men usually make up the shift?
There were from 30 to 35 men mm-hmm. during my career on the fire department mm-hmm. on each shift.
Mm-hmm.
This included the supervision. A battalion chief supervises 7 captains and 7 lieutenants. An assistant chief supervises the 3 battalion chiefs, as well as overseeing the operation of the 3 shifts. Also, my responsibilities were as the training officer for the fire department. I had to schedule the training for the fire department.
Did the men within the experienced men train the younger men, or?
Yes. We can talk about the training division of the fire department now.
Mm-hmm.
You say you would prefer to?
No, that's fine. Go right ahead.
In about 1970, late 72 or 73, there was a national report called America Burning that came out, and it cited the fire problem nationwide. And there were several areas of concern. One was that fire departments had to take a new direction more toward fire prevention and public education. Additional training was needed for the people, and a level of professionalism through training had to be developed. The state of Illinois was one of the first states to develop this certified firefighter level program. And most of the nation adopted or patterned, the other states patterned theirs after the state of Illinois.
A real tribute.
So Illinois was a pioneer in this area. At that time, the levels were established for firefighter competency and certification. There were also instructors or training people levels certified. There were fire officer levels established. And we started, the fire department started to train their officers as instructors. Now, initially, this was to achieve the level one training officer level. It required a course over at the University of Illinois Fire Service Institute on how to instruct.
The and university offers the fire service.
Yes, State Fire College, so to speak, is located at the University of Illinois. And now it is called the Fire Service Institute. They train fire department personnel, as they do engineers and doctors and other areas. But that's about the time that this certification program or establishing a real professionalism for the fire service started.
What was the impetus for this in the national government? Under what department or who started the concern?
That was when the National Fire Administration was established within the government. Before this time, most of the fire problems were left to the cities or municipalities to govern their own systems. And while no one organization took charge of the total picture.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this was justified?
Very definitely, and needed. Mm-hmm. And needed. The number of lives lost dropped drastically within a few years. Municipalities didn't have the funds to really look into the problem in depth, where the National Fire Administration did. And they did look into it and found what most of the problems were. Firefighters for centuries had done well at fighting fires. We could put the fire out after it started, but that wasn't the answer to the problem. You had to prevent the fires from starting. And this is where the savings in life and property really came in.
It worked.
Yes. And the Decatur Fire Department is a very progressive department and has been prior to my being chief and will continue after I retire.
Yeah.
They jump on the bandwagon very early and are willing to try new things and new methods to accomplish their goals.
But we haven't made you chief yet.
Well,
let's see how you got to be chief.
Former Fire Chief Hapham retired in April of 1974, and that was when I was appointed by the city manager, Les Allen, to be Fire Chief for the Decatur Fire Department. And that is when I started my duties as Chief of the Fire Department. In 1974, Decatur had four disasters in about a half a year's time. In late winter, we had a 23-inch snow, and the streets were blocked, and while we did not have, the number of fires didn't increase, but the ones that we did have, we had trouble getting to because of the cars that were stalled and blocked the streets. How do you answer a first aid call or a rescue call if you can't get there? Mm-hmm. Well, the way we did it at the time, we had some personnel that had snowmobiles.
Okay.
So we pushed those into duty. In April of 74, a tornado hit the northwest section of the city. May of 74, Decatur.
Were there fires involved in that, or was the fire department involved?
The fire department was involved, but there were no fires.
Mm-hmm.
We were extremely fortunate.
You just helped with the problems that occurred.
Correct, and helped people get back on their feet.
Yeah.
We provided lighting, rescue work, treated the injured, things like this.
And all of that is part of firefighting training.
That's correct. That's correct. We are called on to handle any and all emergencies. If an emergency occurs, they call us. Now, that emergency is left up to the person calling as to what kind of an emergency they have. Now, in early years, fire departments were noted for getting cats out of trees. Now, to some people, that's a real emergency. And at one time, it was considered a real emergency, and the fire department did answer animal calls. Fire departments no longer do that. You cannot sacrifice or take a human life for an animal.
Yeah.
That just isn't done. The city of Decatur has animal control people that handle these types of situations. Also, the old image of a firefighter sitting around and doing nothing, that's absolutely not the case. Firefighters now spend much more productive time than they used to. The sitting around the fire station just isn't done.
They're learning new techniques.
The training.
Working on equipment.
I think last year the firefighters put in about 28,000 hours of training. Now this included classroom and drill. There are always new techniques to be taught. There are new subject areas that must be covered. The emergency medical calls, the fire department is answering many more emergency medical calls now than what they used to first aid calls. It used to be that we responded as first aid level trained people. The American Red Cross first aid was what our people were trained at, and that's the service that we provided, and that's no longer the case. Decatur is unique in the way it responds to emergency medical calls. We have one ambulance service in Decatur, and the fire department and the ambulance service work very closely together. The cooperation is greater here. And when other cities hear about how we work it here, they can't believe it. When a call is received, of course, now we have the 911 phone system. When a call is received by city dispatchers, if the person requests the ambulance service, the call is immediately transferred to the ambulance service. If the person requests help, then the fire department units are dispatched, and the call is also then given to the ambulance service by way of the fire department dispatcher.
If it's needed.
That's right. If any time a person is injured, they may be needed.
Mm-hmm.
So the ambulance service starts a vehicle there to the scene. And if they're needed, they come on in, and if they're not needed, then they don't come in.
Mm-hmm.
The ambulance service provides advanced life support while the fire department provides basic life support until the ambulance
mm-hmm.
service with their
mm-hmm.
paramedic units get there.
Mm-hmm.
If a call is received by the ambulance service and the person needs help and one of our units can get there quicker,
they notify you.
They notify us and we respond with our 7 fire stations, and we have our emergency medical trained people at all 7 locations. We frequently can get there quicker and provide a service before than the ambulance service can because of our locations.
Yes.
So
now I think you started telling about 4 emergencies.
Four disasters. The fourth disaster, and probably...
Excuse me, didn't you say it was the first one was...
The first one was a snowstorm.
The
second one was the...
Tornado.
A third one was a flood.
Oh.
Decatur
was really hit hard.
We spent our time sandbagging the waterworks, so we didn't lose it, or lose water to the citizens. The fourth disaster was the Norfolk and Western explosion.
Oh, yes.
That was in July 19th of 1974.
Oh.
That was probably the largest fire-type disaster that the city has had.
And you definitely had to play a big part in that.
Yes, we certainly did. I don't know if... Do you want me to recall some of the...
I think you should, because there are, and myself and others weren't here then.
Well, at about 4:45 a.m. on July 19th, 1974, a switching crew at the Decatur yards of the Norfolk and Western Railroad pushed 5 loaded jumbo tank cars onto track number 11. They cut them loose and allowed them to roll eastward toward an empty boxcar that had been previously switched to that track. The tank cars impacted the boxcar with sufficient force to cause the coupler of the boxcar to override the coupler of the tank car, the leading tank car, and punctured the head or end of the tank car. Now, this tank car was loaded with LP gas.
Oh,
now,
dangerous.
The LP gas spilled from the hole, and it vaporized when it came in contact with the air and formed a huge vapor cloud. Now, this cloud covered approximately 1/2 mile wide and 3/4 mile long. At about 5:03 a.m., that vapor cloud found a source of ignition and exploded. And the explosion was tremendous. The shock wave was reportedly felt 40 miles away. Damage done. There were 700 homes damaged. 67 residents were destroyed. 11 schools.
Blown apart.
Yes. 11 schools were damaged. There were 30.
Unfortunately, this wasn't when they were in session.
No. That's one of the blessings that we felt that we had, were thankful for. The direction of travel of the concussion went across the least populated area of the city, across the lake. Also, the early hour,
was a blessing.
There was a blessing. The children were not in school. There were no workers at most of the businesses. Factory workers in the industrial area were at a minimum because the night shift generally aren't the largest number of workers there. There were no fires in the homes that were damaged. And there were not any additional explosions in the rail yard. That was definitely the largest problem that the Decatur Fire Department had to deal with. It was kind of a unique situation. The rail yards were not within the city limits. So they were in a no man's land. They were not under our jurisdiction, the Decatur Fire Department's jurisdiction, nor were they under anybody else's jurisdiction.
So what did you do?
We handled it as if it were in the city. We had to because of the city residents surrounding the rail yards. Mm-hmm. We had to control the situation so it would not do further damage to city residences or property. There were 7 railroad employees lost their lives. There were 40 railroad employees injured, and 7 of those lost their lives. There were 312 non-railroad persons injured. Most of those were from the residential area. Most of these injuries were minor burns from the initial heat from the explosion, lacerations, mostly minor, and other minor type injuries. The railroad yards were approximately 60 sets of rail tracks wide. There were 283 freight cars demolished, and there was damage to an additional over 300 other cars. It was really a huge disaster. Most of our concerns at the time were rescue operations. We were not aware that the people in the residential areas surrounding the yards had gotten out. So our first concerns were to search through these residential structures to make sure that there were not any injured people there. And also in the rail yards, there was a building which housed railroad workers. They slept there. There was a restaurant there. They ate there. And we knew that there were sleeping accommodations, I believe, for 38 people there. And they could have all been occupied. We got companies into the middle of the rail yards as quickly as possible and searched for those people and got those people out, or helped get those people out. It made you stop and think whether you were in the right occupation or not in a situation like that. There were other concerns in the rail yard that day. There were other hazardous cars that we had to be concerned with. There were 4 other LP tank cars coupled to the car that ruptured. Those had to be gotten out. There was 1 alcohol car, which could have caused very serious problems.
Well, you had to cooperate with the railroad to do all this, didn't you?
Yes, we did, and we received excellent cooperation from the railroad while we were trying to handle this situation. There was also a car of explosives and a car of munitions. There were about a dozen other cars in the yard that probably could have caused another explosion had they ignited, similar to the one that had occurred.
But they did not.
They did not.
Okay.
This was part of the fire department's main concerns. Mm-hmm. Now, the National Transportation Safety Board, who investigated this disaster, indicated that excessive switching speed was the cause of this accident. Now, at about that same time nationwide, there were other rail yard accidents that caused the railroad industry to provide additional safety measures for these hazardous materials cars. So from every bad, there is some good that comes from it. Well, that fairly well covers the largest disaster that...
You're glad that not every year is like 1974.
We were very, very happy about that. Changes in the fire department over the years. When I was first employed by the fire department, there was a lot of concerns then because of the coal-fired furnaces. There were a lot of chimney fires and roof fires. As the natural gas became available, the coal-fired furnaces were converted to burning natural gas, and that eliminated a lot of most of the chimney fires and roof fires. But it seems like that as you cure one problem, another problem always comes up. The energy crunch made people much more aware of the need to conserve energy, and wood-burning fireplaces came into being. And with wood-burning fireplaces also came more fires caused from the wood-burning fireplaces. The need...
People weren't familiar with how to deal with wood fires.
No, and they weren't installed correctly. Mm-hmm. And there were no codes governing the initial stages when the fireplaces were first put in. So codes had to be developed to control these types of situations. Another large concern now with the fire departments, the need for additional insulation because of energy conservation came to light. Insulation was developed from newspaper, shredded
flammable
newspaper. It's cellulose insulation. Mm-hmm. And one of the most effective of the insulation materials. The only problem was that in blowing this cellulose insulation into homes that needed it, you have to protect it from prolonged exposure to recessed light fixtures.
Oh, yes.
Because of the heat buildup in the recessed light fixture. And now they are having problems caused from this insulation becoming overheated. Mm-hmm. And while it does not burn openly, it smolders and spreads until it reaches a material that will burn, a wood or other paper source in home construction, and has caused several house fires in Decatur.
So a large part of your duties are to educating the public.
Right. This is the answer to the fire problem. Educating the public as to how they can prevent fires, and the need for early detection. Now there is a state law requiring smoke detectors in all residential structures.
Smoke detectors are effective?
Very effective. However, there is also maintenance required on smoke detectors. And our department has offered for the last several years information to people on how and where to install the smoke detector so they'll be installed correctly, and the maintenance that is required to make sure that they continue to operate.
Affecting batteries and stuff.
Yes, replacing the batteries in hotel motel units. We now require that the detectors be hardwired. In other words, they're
not batteries.
They're not battery operated. That's correct. For years, there has been a saying that most fires are caused by three factors: men, women, and children, or the careless acts. And that is fairly much a true statement. If we can control people, there are only very few fires that are not started by careless acts of men, women, and children.
Such as lightning and other
right.
natural
These are your natural causes. Fires in the kitchen. There are a lot of fires in kitchens because we don't give our cooking stoves the maintenance that they require. We don't keep them clean. There's a buildup of grease. This causes problems. We don't clean out the broiler. This causes problems. We know that we can only plug so many electrical appliances into an outlet, so then we try to octopus it and plug more appliances in, and this overloads our electrical circuits. These are the types of careless acts that we know we shouldn't be doing, but we do them anyway.
So you do need to train the public to...
You bet. That's a big job of the fire department now, and all fire department employees are into this training of the public. There is a speakers bureau established by the city that fire department members will go any place and present a program that is appropriate for the group that they're appearing before, telling them about the fire problem and how to help us solve it.
And the public has responded?
Yes, extremely well. And I'm not sure what the reasons are that they have responded. Obviously, we have been trying to get to them. We have been trying to get them through the news media and other sources. We have gotten through to some. Insurance costs increases have caused people to be more concerned. They can't afford the loss.
Right.
They can't afford it. You can't replace some items, regardless of the insurance you have. The main efforts of the fire department now are directed toward the children. The old adage that you can't teach an old dog new tricks is fairly accurate. While we are getting through to a large percentage of the adults, there are still the most apathy toward the fire problem still comes from the adults. The children are going back to their parents and getting the parents involved because of many of the programs that the fire department offers today.
That's good. Well, Mr. Minton, as you look back on your career, what are your feelings? You've indicated when you started that you had enjoyed this career that you chose, and you still feel that way.
I certainly do. I would not have done anything different. It's very rewarding to know that you have helped somebody.
It certainly is.
And I think
your
this
work is very much appreciated by the public, I'm sure.
Well, we hope that it is. We hope that it is. The fire department has always been looked on as the city service that's offered as being the good guys.
Well, of course.
When they call us,
we call on you.
When they call us, they need help, and when we get there, things start improving toward the better.
That's good.
And this is why, and we do a good job.
Well, you certainly do.
And this is why we're the good guys, and it's a very rewarding job, very rewarding.
Well, it is great to look back on a career like yours and feel that good about your work. What are you going to do during your retirement?
Well, I don't have any hard, fast plans. I would like to do a little traveling. There's a lot of this country that I have not seen.
Mm-hmm. We haven't talked about your personal life. Do you have a family?
Yes. I have a wife who has stood by me through the years, even though she thought my first love was the fire department. I have a son that's on the fire department, and this was a decision that he made himself.
And that is a compliment to you.
I feel that it is. I have three daughters.
Good.
One of them also works for the city of Decatur. One lives only about an hour from Decatur, and I have two grandchildren from her and one from the daughter that lives in Decatur, and I have one daughter that lives in Dallas, Texas.
Oh.
So
you have reason to travel.
We have a little reason to travel, yes, although I don't want to spend as much time with them as I'd like because they have their lives to live,
Of course, that's true.
But there's a lot of things to see. My wife and I have some little motor scooters that we enjoy riding around on.
Very good.
So if you see an elderly person such as myself riding around on these little blue motor scooters, you'll know it's my wife and I.
Well, good. So I hope you have a very happy retirement.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
And we really appreciate your sharing your experiences with us.
I hope I haven't been boring.
Not a bit. You have given us a great deal of enlightenment and have taught us, at least taught me, and I'm sure our listeners, points about the fire department that we weren't aware of. And I really appreciate what you've done for us.
Well, thank you. And one last comment. Yeah. If you have further interest in the fire department, don't hesitate to go to the fire department and ask for somebody to come and talk to you more.
Very good. Well, we'll hope that people do take advantage of that. Well, thank you very much. You have been listening to the experiences of Mr. Donald E. Minton as he retires from his position as chief of the Decatur Fire Department. And this is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. This recording was made in the library on November 14th, 1988.